Let's do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, 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 oh. Oh yeah. It's the Empowerment Hour. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Roan, and a group coming to your life. We got peace on deck. We got a vision for change. We got a discussion. We got a conversation. It's family time. Come on, y'all. Join me. Call a friend. It's family time. African American empowerment. 1 hour and a half. What you gonna do? Oh, yeah. Brothers and sisters, welcome, welcome. There is no better love. There is no greater love than for self and kind. You're probably asking, why you always say that, right? Because there is no greater love for a people who have been in the condition, in the situation that we're in. And again, we're talking about African-American empowerment, right? We're talking about the descendants of the American slavery system or the chattel slavery system. That's who we're talking to, right? And we're talking about how we, because we were brought here, captured and brought here against our will, many of us, right? And so now since we recognize the system that we're in, we want to make a positive change for our people wherever we are. Nothing is wrong with that, brothers and sisters. Listen to me. Nothing is wrong with having an agenda to advocate for great schools for your kids. There's nothing wrong with advocating for pride within yourself and within your race. There is nothing wrong with feeling good about you because of the color of your skin, that you were made and created by the Most High Power, the Creator, the God Himself made you. Our people need to understand and recognize our power, and the power is within you, right? And so the change has to come that we're human beings on this planet Earth, aided for a purpose, and that purpose that we were created for and by is living within you, brothers and sisters. Our people have to understand the power that we possess, that other people are using for their material wealth, just like our labor, right? Now, I will say clearly, I'm not against anybody, but I'm for us. Now, some of us will be talking about, oh, well, why you got to do all that black talking? Because we need healing. That's why. Go to any community where African Americans are and you'll see it. And it's not because we are dysfunctional. It's because we're in a cycle of dysfunction in a system that has created dysfunction. And we want to disrupt the program. Sorry. How do you do it? We got an agenda. It's the peace concept. It's a peace agenda because we need peace within ourselves, within our hearts, within our minds, within our communities. And it's so true. We need peace. We do, right? Just go anywhere where we are, any of our public housing communities or anywhere where we are, what we call in low-income areas, and you'll see it. You'll see it in the schools. You'll see it in the streets. You'll see it in the homes. You'll see it in the families. And I'll even dare say this, that just because you have attained a certain level of wealth does not mean that you are not living in dysfunction. You just can hide it better. You just can hide it better. So when we analyze and take a really good look at ourselves, we need peace. We need a political agenda wherever we are. We need to start ensuring that our needs are met because of the situation and the condition that we're in. I heard a lady say, I don't see color. Well, I do, because I know what color does in this country, right? We know, people of color know what color means and the impact that it has on you in getting jobs and opportunities, getting a good education, right? I don't know why race is important, because it's not important to you, but the system does, because the system created it. How? We disrupt the system, period, by having an economic agenda. That's the E. You need a political agenda and an economic agenda that benefits and that promotes African-American empowerment wherever we are. Why? Because we deserve it. We need to be educated. We need to not try to act like other people, but define and refine ourselves that we can become the best people that we can be, right? So when our people start talking about why y'all keep talking all that black talk, because we need it. And if you are not there working for the empowerment and the improvement of our communities wherever we are, then that is just too bad. All I'm asking you to do is know yourself now and begin to do the work of working on yourself. Now the A. The A is very important because it's individualized. You have to do the work of understanding how important it is that health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition is to your health, your mental health, your physical health, your emotional health. This is African-American empowerment, right? Your mind is the greatest tool you have, and your health is beside it. They go together, your mind, your body, and your life. And you have to work to improve those things, right? You got to push away from the table. You do. You got to stop eating some things. You do. Again, you got to be able to put your health and your wellness in front of some other stuff that's going to harm you, because you got to be around to teach, train, develop, and educate the next generation. You do. We have to have a concept in place that's going to help us help ourselves. We're not looking for a handout. We're looking for a hand up. We're looking to improve ourselves by doing the work of working on ourselves, right? So we need some resources. We need an economic agenda to create institutions that define our own reality. We do. And we have to do that by having agendas. You have to have an A in place. You have to be able to take care of your body. Next is C. It's relevant cultural programs to help guide, right, to help train, teach, and develop our young people to get this culture in our communities. While we build better families, we build better individuals, we build better homes, and we build better communities. And those individuals that live in those communities have the resources that they need to get out of survival mode and sustain and maintain healthy households and healthy families wherever we are. Nothing wrong with that. And then the E is education. It's a comprehensive education that allows us to strive for the best that we can maintain and attain all at the same time. And here's the deal. The education piece is so important because when you educate, you understand how to communicate. And when you understand how to communicate, then you're on your way to becoming the best person that you can be by communicating with others and yourself about what needs to be done. And that is the empowerment concept. Peace and empowerment for African Americans. Stan Macklin moment.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah,
I just,
man,
I
we
just
got
love
the
it
deck.
When you, I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Brother Stan is not with us anymore, but he's absolutely right. I'm going to play it every week. We need institutions that define our own reality. What's wrong with putting your kids in great schools that are designed to help them be them best, their best selves? Not trying to be like any other people, just being well-educated, being sound and confident in who they are, what they look like, the texture of their hair, the size of their nose and their lips, the color of their skin, and that we can understand how to benefit from having those institutions that enrich our people, our children, our communities. Nothing wrong with that. And here's the deal, right? It starts with you. You have to begin now to do the work of working on yourself to eradicate the program that's working inside of you about how we feel about ourselves, right? And it's a hard, huge task, right? Because the reality is that we have to face it. We have to look at ourselves, and we have to figure out what's going on, and we have to be able to disrupt that program. And now for the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Oh, yeah. We are fire. Hey. Come on, Brother George. Bring it.
Bring it. What?
Oh, yeah. We ain't going nowhere except back home if we want to. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. How are you today?
Show. I'm doing well.
Thank you, brother.
I'm empowered.
Thank
I'm motivated. I'm inspired.
Okay. Well,
what you
I'm
got
inspired
for
a show as well. You know, I think that it's a great topic today. You know, somewhat of a potluck, but I feel like I'm ready.
All right.
Now, today, today's Kwanzaa principle from the Nguza Stapa is Kujichagulia, which is self-determination, to define for ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. I think that's very significant, especially today, because that was one of the foundations that Brother James built to put together the ambassador program, was that he wanted the voiceless to have a voice. And I really appreciate that. Now, this is from a small book called Kwanzaa Year Round, written by a sister by the name of Gwenelle Dismukes. Kujichagulia, self-determination, rites of passage and initial ceremonies in traditional African culture place a great value of emphasis on self-discipline as a means of attaining personal power and realizing one's full potential. Self-discipline and self-expression are the twin keys to a balanced, effective, and productive character. I love it. Yes, sir, I love that. Now, today, for the Willie Mint segment, I'm going to read out of a book from a brother that I greatly, greatly respect, Dr. Naeem Akbar. And his book is Chains and Images of Psychological Slavery. It's a small book that you probably could read in one setting, but it probably wouldn't do you justice to read it in one setting because there's so much information in it that you have to really ponder what he's talking about, that I would take a longer period of time. Otherwise, leaders are projected by the masters, media and press. And when I say masters, that means our ex-slave masters, and are often chosen for illiterate athletes are usually chosen from illiterate athletes, politically naive preachers, or even entertainers. The leadership of such persons seldom extends beyond their faddish and transitionary stardom. Meanwhile, all other forms of small-scale and large-scale leaders, indigenous or otherwise, are destroyed by suspiciousness and disrespect. As a people, African Americans must begin to recognize the disposition which has been conditioned in us to reject natural, effective leadership. If we understand that we have been programmed through our history, our natural heads, we may begin to become more conscious of realizing true leadership. It can be easily demonstrated that the persistent distrust and limited support given to African American leaders has an origin in the many inappropriate heads which have been affixed to our bodies historically. Now, what he's saying is that, like, if they have a basketball player or a football player or a baseball player who really is, you know, doesn't really know a great deal about the condition of our people, or they feel like their tongue is limited to really talk about the true issues, then they'll choose that kind of person as your leader, because they're going to lead you down the path that they want you to lead down. And that means don't discuss anything that deals with white supremacy. Don't talk about anything that deals with white nationalism. don't talk about anything that deals with the prosperity of black people, the accomplishments of black people. Don't talk about anything that is going to contradict the society's views of who the black man is, black man and black woman are in this country and in the world. Don't disrupt that view. And so those are the kind of leaders that they choose for us. And so that's why we find ourselves in love with the TV set. Looking at the TV set as a form of this is how you should live your life. With a lot of the crazy reality shows that they have on there that depict our people really, you know, in a cast of buffoonery again. And a lot of times we don't even realize that, you know. But Brother Marvin, that's my segment for today. And if you have any questions, otherwise, back to you.
Great job, Brother George, as always. Always. Now, the question is, why, and this is the Kwanzaa segment, right? And I want to go back to it before the show's over. But why is self-determination so important for our people?
Well, self-determination is so important because it puts the burden of accomplishment and the changing of your life on you as an individual. And until individuals take responsibility for changing themselves and bettering themselves, then the group is going to stay the same. Because the group is made up of a group of individuals. And so when you talk about self-determination and speaking for yourself and defining yourself, that is how you grow. Because most people, most racial groups of people, they grow off of the quintessential accomplishments of their people. And so that's why you see statues of different people and sculptures and pictures of people who accomplished great things in those people's past. And they look to those examples as what they would like for their children and for themselves to be like. And so that is like an individual task that you take on to learn about who you are in the world, because what your group did, you did. So that's why it's so vitally important that you, you know, self-determination, brother. I hope I answered.
Thank you, Brother George. Yes,
you are.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate it. Now, let's get on with the show. Appreciate it, brother. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to do something slightly different on this show than on many others. Before we get started, I want to say shout out to Dr. Bruce, his family, as they heal from the passing of one of his relatives, so he couldn't be here today. But we're going to modify our concept just a bit to talk about the peace concept, because I always introduced it, and somebody said, Marvin, you don't talk enough about it, and you don't really share what it is. So we're going to talk about the peace concept as a vision for our change as African-American community and for healing. Now, the real deal is, Brother George, is that our community needs healing on multiple levels, right? And so as we talk about the peace concept, about politics, about economics, about athletics, which is health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition, culture, and education, those additional supports that we're going to talk about today and how they are so beneficial to what's happening in our communities on the ground. Now, not every individual that's African American is going to be impacted, but when we look at the numbers, right, and we look at how many of our people need healing, and again, it doesn't really speak to your economic status so much of the dysfunction that goes on within and the conditioning that lies within us to force us to make choices that we make in our lives. And so what we're going to do is talk about the peace concept today. We're going to call in many of the members of the team to kind of talk to you about some of the concepts. And then you as a listener can get to call in 845-277-9250 to join the discussion. We're going to start with our brother Acabulan. You good with that, brother George?
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go. Brother Acabulan coming to you. Bring it. I love you. Hey, mama.
Bring it.
Brother Acabulan, are you there?
Yeah, waiting for the music to die down.
All right, you got that's your introduction,
Yeah, my proposal is a solution to the gun violence before it ends up at my doorstep. When you come into my front door, there's a picture on the wall of a lion, and a gazelle, and it's a quote on the picture that says, every morning in Africa, a gazelle wakes up. It knows it must run faster than the fastest lion, or it would be killed. Every morning a lion wakes up. It knows it must outrun the slowest gazelle, or it will starve to death. It doesn't matter whether you are a lion or a gazelle, when the sun comes up, you'd better be running. I don't believe that one day the lion is going to lie down next to the gazelle. If the lion does, it's to join the gazelle for breakfast, and the gazelle would be the breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere in that quote does it suggest laws for the perpetrator of violence, in this case, the lion, because lions do what lions do.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere in that quote does it suggest going around and collecting all the lion's teeth. It says the responsibility for one's own protection lies within the potential victim. The gazelle must run faster, and man or mind must outsmart the lion. My proposal is a bill geared towards training all Virginians, gun owners or not, how to minimize becoming a victim of violence. There are laws geared towards perpetrators of violence. There are laws geared towards certain firearms. But there is no law for all Virginians to be trained on how to minimize becoming a victim of violence. I was doing volunteer work at Coffeywood Juvenile Corrections near Culpeper, Virginia. I had 30 girls from two different pods. One pod had 15 girls that had yellow uniforms. Another pod had 15 girls that had purple uniforms. I created a scenario where I asked one girl from the yellow pod to come center of the room. I asked a girl from the purple pod to come center of the room. Now, these two girls are going to fight. Whether they want to fight or not, they're going to fight because they got to save face for their group. So I asked the remaining girls, 15 in the yellow pod, 14 remaining in the yellow pod, and 14 remaining in the purple pod, how do you stop these two girls from fighting? And I paused, like you are doing now. And no one had the answer. I told the 14 girls in yellow pod, you can go get your girl because she's one of yours and she can save face. I told the other 14 girls in the purple pod, she's your girl. You can go get her and she can save face. A lot of times we wait until it gets to almost a near physical altercation. But the physical altercation is a manifestation or the verbal altercation that preceded it. Let me repeat that. The physical altercation is a manifestation of the verbal altercation that preceded it. It's not likely I'm going to walk on George and just punch him in the face when there wasn't a verbal altercation that preceded it, or he wasn't involved in drugs, or I didn't owe him some money of some kind. Most likely, the verbal altercation preceded it. I've got over 40 years of experience working with young folks, and they know I always said that. The physical altercation is a manifestation of the verbal altercation that preceded it. If I can get you to nip it at the verbal stage, it may not get physical. March 16th, 1991, 15-year-old Latasha Hollins was killed. This was 13 days after the beating of Rodney King. So it was overshadowed by the Rodney King beating. The queer Korean store owner observed Latasha putting a $1.79 bottle of orange juice in her backpack. The camera shows Latasha with money in her hand intending to pay for the orange juice. This is where you get different accounts of the incident. The Korean clerk claimed she asked Latasha if she intended to pay for the orange juice. Latasha supposedly responded, "What orange juice?" Eyewitness testimony disputed this claim and said the Korean woman called Latasha a bitch. I wasn't there, and for our discussion, it's hearsay. There was a panel discussion on the incident weeks later. A brother on the panel said Latasha could have prevented that. What did he say that for? Everybody jumped on the brother. He could not be heard from all the emotionalism. No one was listening to the brother. I heard him very clearly. Sure, Latasha's back was turned. Sure, the Korean woman had a gun and Latasha didn't. However, before Latasha got shot, there was a verbal altercation, then a scuffle, then a punch in the face. The Korean clerk ends up on the ground. She shoots Latasha in the back of the head. There were things that took place. If you take any one of those variables out, the verbal altercation, the punch in the face, and just come back home to the community, get your people together, and complain about the incident. Don't go back to the whole lot of things that could have taken place where a young girl, 15 years old, would still be alive. So my proposal is teaching Virginians how to minimize being a victim. Firearm safety should not just be for gun owners. It should be for non-gun owners as well. I remember when I was 25 years old, my girlfriend went in the trunk of my car to get something, and she moved my gun and pointed at her daughter's face. A person who is a gun owner knows you never point a gun at someone. But my girlfriend wasn't a gun owner. So she didn't get the training. So this training, it should be for everyone. Our opposition will always be the NRA. But there should be no opposition because we're not singling out responsible gun owners. Everyone should be responsible for safety. What do you do when you have mass shootings indoors? What do you do when you have mass shootings outdoors? If there's a mass shooting outdoors, why are you running past the tree? Why are you running past the car? You're not thinking of these things. If there's mass shootings inside, where do you hide? When do you run? When do you hide? When do you fight? Do you fight as individuals or do you fight as a group? You don't wait till there's chaos to know the answer to these questions. These questions you know beforehand. So if you put in that situation, you'll know what to do. Let's go to school shootings. When I was employed, I was in charge of million-dollar bank drafts, coming from car dealership, coming from banks. And the Brinks truck would bring these sacks of money, $1 million, $2 or $3 million. Before that truck driver comes, the truck driver is armed. He has a weapon on his hip. If I let him inside and he doesn't work for Brink, he could ship the place. But I got a picture of the driver beforehand. And when he comes to the gate, if the picture I have on my computer screen doesn't match the picture of that driver, he doesn't come in. If my regular driver, for some reason, is on vacation, and there's a new driver coming, named Marvin, for example, I have a picture beforehand of Marvin. The picture Marvin showed me doesn't match the picture on my computer. He doesn't come in. Why does it we have more safety in that measure than we have for our school systems? If a person has been discharged from school, if a person doesn't go to that school, there should be something to let the person at the gate know this person doesn't belong here. But not to let that person. It's a whole lot of measures that could be taking place. And finally, police officer. I know Brother General can give you a long program on how to minimize being victim of police brutality. I was stopped numerous times, and when I'm stopped, the first thing I do is put my hands through the steering wheel over the dashboard so he won't feel threatened. Because a lot of times they're scared also. He asked me to look at my glove compartment. He asked me to get my registration card. I said, it's in my glove compartment. And I was just joking. I said, I don't feel like getting shot today. Ain't a good day to die. Yesterday was a good day, but today ain't a good day. He said, I'm not that kind of person. That's why I can't take the chance. But anyway, I didn't have any problem. From that point, if there's anything we're going further, I want to speak to my attorney. And I tell young folks that I want to speak to my attorney. But they just go on and keep on talking. So these are certain things that we need to do. And my proposal is I have it drawn out. I'm not going to say it on this program because it's going to take too much time. But I have a proposal drawn out for people in the community and those that's in my group to look at it, add additions, deletions, fine-tune it, and then send to our representative and have it passed. Because we know it doesn't exist because I would have taken the training. Now, I've got a lot of training because I'm a gun owner. But everybody should have safety measure training on use of a handgun, not necessarily use of a handgun, but at least know you don't point it a gun at anyone, whether you think it's empty or not, and how to protect yourself. And finally, have a keen mind on safety. When you go to the movie theater, where do you sit? Do you sit together? Do you sit apart? Do you see up front where the exits are? These things we don't know, and these questions have to be answered. And that's my portion, Brother Marv.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Kebulan. And this is what we're talking about. This is education, right? Now, he said something. This is he is talking about it for Virginia. I'm saying let's think about it wherever you are for the brothers and sisters in Alabama, in Georgia, in Maryland, in D.C. or wherever we are, right? Because gun safety is so important, and the education piece is what we're talking about. So now we're talking about a political agenda that speaks to how we can stay safe, right? The brother's talking about safety when dealing with the law enforcement. We, again, can have a national policy amongst African Americans about how that should go on and how we can integrate these practices into our lives so we can stay safe. Brother George, any thoughts?
Yes, sir. The one thought that's in my mind is that that is an excellent idea, and I don't see how it could be turned down. I don't see how it would make any sense at all to turn that idea down and not put it into law. So I'm with you, Brother Kevin Lyon, 100%.
Brother Kevin, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. What made you come up with this idea, this concept? And I know you didn't go into extreme detail. And again, for those who are interested, you can get in contact with us and we can give you more detail on it. But how did you come up with such a wonderful idea for the safety of our people?
Well, when you look at the killing that's going on in Columbine, and you had one where this guy just at some point you wait till it come to your door, right? And I said that as soon as it come to your doorstep, you could be out there with Kevlar and Marvin and George, and it shouldn't get to that point. You should do something right now. And so I've got over 4 years of experience working with young folks in juvenile corrections, and I notice a lot of times, first of all, when you're doing that type of work, it make your job easier if you didn't have too many squabbles every day, too many fightings every day. So I always nip it before I get to the physical stage. I said, brother, that verbal altercation is going to lead to the physical. Nip it in the verbal stage right now. We don't want to, because I'd rather go ahead and nip this thing right now in the verbal stage than two guys 200 pounds apiece fighting, and I got to separate you two. That make my job, I was a youth counselor. That make a bad day for me. And so often, you'll see sisters or brothers getting ready to fight, and you coast them on. Instead of somebody coming to lip it at the verbal stage, I see where it's going. I see where it's going. Let's lip it at the verbal stage so it won't get that far. And we're not doing that. And so I sit time and meditate. I think Asa Hilliard said, prayer is when you talk to God. Meditation is when God talks to you. So you sit home and you're quiet and in your solitude, certain things come to you. And then as African people, we're creative. We got solutions for our own situations. We don't have to go to anyone else. And I looked online for the representative, and the representative in our area, his platform is just what we talked about, how to bring safety to the community with the violence and all that's going on. And the state usually spend a lot of time focused on the perpetrator of violence. Let the state do that. But I'm realist. Some people are not going to put their guns down. Some people are going to be so-called bad people. Charles Manson, for example. After all those years in jail, he said, if you let me out tomorrow, I'm going to do the same thing over again. So what do? You spend all your time trying to change Charles, or you change you? That's how I come with that conclusion.
All right. Thank you, brother. We appreciate you. That is our political agenda. And the brother also said, which is really powerful, he said, politics equals power. Right? We got to understand how a political agenda and what it means. Thank you, brother. We're going to do Q&A at the end. So if you have any questions, any comments for this segment on gun violence and community violence and safety in our community, we'll have that at the end. So hold your notes, write your notes. We're going to go to the lines, 845-277-9250. We're going over to Sister Benita. She's going to talk about the A, which is community organizing. Sister Benita, are you there? Brother Kevin, we can keep you on the line. Your mic will be live as well. Hey, Sister Benita, community organizer, what you got for us?
Well, first of all, thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk about the peace concept. I believe it is definitely a game changer. Community engagement seeks to engage the community, but more important, to achieve sustainable outcomes. The decision-making processes should be equitable. And with community engagement, there is a deepening of relationship and trust between agencies, it could be the government, organizations, and communities. And so in the peace concept, that's what we're wanting to do with all the elements of the peace concept. That is the political agenda, the education agenda, the economic agenda, the athletic health and wellness, cultural agenda. And so community engagement has to be a functionality piece for each one of those modalities. And more importantly, And community engagement piece is also a system disruptor. And how I would define a system disruptor, this can be an individual or an organization that recognizes the built-in systems that cripple, discourage, and negatively engage the African-American community in its own demise. A system disruptor in community engagement understands the system and is not distracted by the adaptations that the system makes, the racist system. In community engagement, we understand and introduce another system to replace this maladaptive system of racism. Also, community engagement or being a system disruptor understands the social conditioning of a racist system. And hear me, family, when I say this, and does not blame the victim or the individual, but empowers the individual to develop agency and critical thinking. We are all victims in this system. Does not mean that we cannot be victorious. But we are all in this together. We have all had our conditioning. We may be at different spectrums of the conditioning, but we are all trying to work through the conditioning. Community engagement. Constantly, when you're engaged in the community, you have to also be transparent that I'm working on my own conditioning and be an example that this is a journey, not a destination. As much as I love my people and I'm disgusted with racism, I still have to deal with my own conditioning. And in community engagement, we're participators. We're not instigators. We don't walk around and get in the community talking about other people. We actually point out the strength of other system disruptors. There's other people in the community that are also disrupting the system. And I'll say this last but not least, that in the community engagement model, we are proactive, not reactive. In other words, we don't react, we prepare, we execute, we plan, we comprehend, we examine what is happening in the community and meet those needs by producing achievable, sustainable outcomes that will get us out of our conditioning. And last but not least, we don't make excuses as community organizers. We don't go out in the community and say, well, you should have known. We make adjustments because we understand the conditioning of our people. So the community engagement piece is very, 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 very important because it is the mortar between the bricks. It is what holds everything together. And last but not least, community engagement also has to understand who the leaders are in the community. There's a lot of us on this call that care about what's happening in our community. That does not mean we're their leaders. So when we go into a community, we have to find out who are the influencers in this community and get them to buy in to what we're trying to do so that they can go back in as peers of their community and say, hey, you know what? These people here are really working for our advantage, and they may listen to them quicker than they listen to us. So I hope that I did an okay job in explaining community engagement.
I think you did a great job, sister. Great job, sister. Community development, right, is community engagement. And we have to do a great job of understanding the desperate need for leadership in our communities. How in the world can you make change when you don't know where to start? And so here we have an agenda where we're looking at how we can make a difference right where we are. We all know the needs, right? We know the country and the system that we live in, but not many of us are aware of the programs, right, that make you think and produce the actions and the activities in your life, particularly as a person of color in this society. Again, we got to do the work of examining ourselves and how we function, how we feel about each other, how we treat or mistreat each other, how we respect or how we disrespect each other. And again, having an African-American empowerment agenda, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with trying to get the best benefits for our people so that the world, again, can see us for who we really are, minus the dysfunction. And so we just talked about the political plan of action. That's just one, right? And now we have a community engagement model where you can use this wherever you live. And we're just trying to coalesce together and work together to empower our people, to remove the systems that are operating within our people that create the dysfunction so we can have better homes. It's individual, family, and community empowerment, and there's nothing wrong with that. Brother Kevin Land, do you have a comment, statement, or question?
Yeah, the sister said something that coincided what you said. You said somebody said that they don't see color. You said you do see color. Well, a person who doesn't see color, they want everything to be a melting pot, which means that they're fed up with differences. They don't want to deal with differences. And where everything be a melting pot and all is the same. That's what we've been having. Anyway, everything a melting pot and from a European perspective. So the truth is to recognize the differences. Someone called Jay Winston's book, he said something like a bouquet of flowers. You got different colors and you respect these differences. But this society, they don't want to do that. So we have to assert ourselves. But you see throughout the talk that we all, our positions are going to be interchangeable. But sister said
right.
What you said is interchangeable with what I was saying, yes.
Right, and that's the key here, right? Go ahead, sister.
Yeah, there's one more thing that just kind of came to my mind, and I'm kind of using it as a mnemonic phrase, and I would call it the four C's with community engagement. And that is, one, it's creative, it's innovative, it's creative. Number two, there has to be conflict resolution. Got to have conflict resolution. Part of what Brother Kevalon was saying is that the mouth gets in the way and then it leads to altercations and that leads to gun violence. And then we've got to connect. If there is community engagement and there is no connection, then we're just out there talking. And the last thing, we have to deal with the condition of the community. And that's what I call our cray-cray. I mean, because when we are under this system dealing with the ridiculousness of racism, hating one another, blaming one another, fighting one another, killing one another, doing all kind of crazy stuff to one another, community engagement wants the opportunity to get out there in the community and begin to connect the dots and build community. So I just wanted to add that in there. I forgot to say that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Sister Benita. And again, thank you. We're going to the callers at 3 o'clock. We're going to, again, it's open for discussion. We just had our political agenda, and now we had our community engagement model. And now we're going to go over to the E for Brother George to the education piece. Brother George.
Yes, sir. Education is probably one of the most important things that you will experience in your lifetime. And our education, the type of education that we traditionally had, is demonstrated based on the accomplishments of our people. And the African or Kebilani or Ethiopian or more African-American, it's a lot of different names that we define ourselves as, comedics. Our education and our accomplishments are the greatest in the world. There's no people that can surpass the things that we accomplished, and that was based on the type of education that we had. Now, the interesting thing that happened to us once we got into the Maafa or the enslavement in the Americas is that our education changed. We began to be educated as slaves to do a particular task, and that was the limit of the information that we needed, was only to do these particular tasks. And so our people, some of our people were still coming from the continent in different places, and they were educating us about other things. And that's what I think kept the liberation struggle alive, that we wanted our freedom, is because you had some free-minded people ended up here and were dispersing that information to our people. And then there were other abolitionists who were doing the same thing here already. And that's what kept us somewhat, gave us a different perspective on the world. But for the most part, in today's America, today's United States, most of what we call African Americans are educated from a Eurocentric education. And what that means is that you see the world through the eyes of European people. And so when we look at what is going on with us, the measuring stick that we always use is, yeah, but how does that affect us? And see, the us is Europeans. So when we think of something that is purely necessary for African people, Europeans are not going to see that as being necessary because they still expect for us to behave in the same manner as we did as slaves, as indentures, as servitude type individuals. And I say that, and I'm going to qualify that statement before I go further. It's my belief, and there are other professional people who have written books on this, that it is actually two systems going on in the United States. You have a class system, which is based on how much money you got, and then you have a caste system, which was put together back in like the 16 and 1700s, so that they could, through anthropology, they could redefine who and how valuable each group was in the world. And so that type of education was a Eurocentric education because they're the ones who wrote whose value, how much value was in a Native American, how much value was in an African, how much value was in Asian people, how much value was in European people. They were the ones that made that determination. And so that was passed on into the educational system that we have here in America. So in the 1950s, when they had Brown versus Board of Education, and we fought, because it was very easy to prove that we leaned towards anything European being right and anything African being wrong or negative. And it was proven by what they call the Dow Test. Now, when you come up to like the early 1960s, because Brown versus the Board of Education was won in 1954, but they didn't actually put it into effect until years later because they had to have time to calm down the people that were so rejected to you sitting next to them in the classroom, having our children sit next to theirs in the classroom. But the thing that they never really promised was they never really promised you an Afrocentric education, because you can learn about your Afrocentric perspective. Because like Dr. Clark said, African history is just the missing pages of world history. So all you have to do is just include those pages and the education can be quality. So now I want to, move quickly through my point. My point is that they never promised us that they would give us an Afrocentric education. So for the most part, most of us are black people or white people walking around in black skins because we do things based on how we think they will be affected instead of doing things based on what is best for the progress and enrichment of our own people. And so we always have to question, well, if you're going to have like a program that's set up to help black people, it's okay, you know, for some white people to be involved, but do you really need white people to be involved? Is it really absolutely necessary? And is there really anything wrong with the people that help you that have the greatest amount of input into what is going on, that those people are African-American as well and went through your experience as well? We seem to have a phobia with things that purely help our people, that we feel like there's something wrong with that. And we have to get out of that. We have to get out of the idea that if I say I want to do something and it's going to be strictly through a black education or Afrocentric education, that if it's for our people, if it's for our children, and it will get our children on a more achievable level of thinking and scale, we need to be doing that. And so we right around the time, I guess, for question and answer. And brother, I hope, you know, that I did what you needed with education.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So let's bring us up to speed. So today we had a conversation about the political agenda, right, the political aspect of, again, having the peace concept to be a vision for change and healing within our community, in the aspects of safety, right, of looking at gun violence. And we talked about community action in terms of advocacy for community engagement. And then Brother George wrapped it up with education, and that's a comprehensive education. Before we go to the lines, the number 845-277-9250 if you want to get on in on the discussion or even chime in. But I want to say this. Brother Akebiland made a good analogy about the lion and the gazelle. And I want you to visualize this. If you went to a puppet show and you saw two puppets and the puppets were fighting against each other, right? Now, you know the people who are actually the puppet masters are managing the puppets. And the two puppets are fighting each other and one puppet pulled out a gun and killed the other puppet. Who would you blame? The puppet or the puppet masters? Just a question to think about. 845-277-9250. We're going to the lines. Thank you, Brother Akebiland, Sister Benita, and Brother George. We'll open up the lines. I'm going to bring y'all back in, and then we're going to bring in the music so we can get y'all in here, and then we'll start our Q&A. If you got a question or comment, or just say, hey, I like the show, blah, 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 blah. Here we go. I'm starting off with 3347. Oh, yeah. Bring it. What? 3347, welcome to the show. We're talking about peace as a vision for change in the African-American community. Do you have a question or comment for our panel today? All right, just listening. That's good. Matt, you can always raise your hand. 7487, you're up next on the Empowerment Show. We're talking about healing and the peace concept of vision for change.
Hello?
Do you have a question or comment? Hey, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hello?
I'm 87. I'm 8748.
Okay, welcome to the show.
Oh, okay. This is Nana V. I am on because of Barbara Bruce.
Okay.
And I'm really enjoying it, and all the messages about rites of passage. The one thing I really want to say is that is one of the ways to heal our families in the village. Make sure our children get their rite of passage.
All right.
Damn, that's great.
That's so true. We need it. We need it. Thank you, sister, and keep listening. Let's continue to form the network around the country to help us help ourselves. Thank you, sister. All right, let's go on down to 01. Thank you, sister. 0148. You are up next. You have a question or comment. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for picking my call. This is specifically for Brother Akibulan. Brother Akibulan, I'm just curious, how do you teach young people to not just look at themselves in one direction, look at themselves as they live in a sphere of existence, so from left to right, up and down, back and forward, to create that sphere of existence around them? Just how do you do that?
I try to think of who his voice is, because the voice sounds familiar, right? But it's a quote I use. It says, it goes like this. Matter of fact, I wrote the quote. And it says, you can't always change what goes on outside your mind, but you can always change your mind. And in doing so, the outside picture changes. What shows up on light screen depends on the film you put in your mental camera. If you put core negativity in your mental camera, that's what's going to show up on light screen. You put positive in your mental camera, that's what's going to show up on light screen. I was doing volunteer work at Juvenile Correction Center. And brother said, well, when I go home, I live in a rat-infested neighborhood. I said, I grew up in a rat-infested neighborhood. But I'm not the area that I grew up in. I could always change my mind. And then what shows up on life screen would be different. But you got to change your mind first. So what George was saying and what all the panelists were saying, our mind changes. And that's what you got to do, look at yourself differently.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, brother, for your call. Continue to support
Thank
the network.
Brother,
we appreciate
George.
You.
Of course.
Definitely. All right. Sister Benita, Brother George, you want to add anything before we go to the next call?
I would just like to say that I think that it's important that you have to deal with the element of shame. The caller, or I think it was Brother Kibalon that was saying that one of the children was saying that I grew up in a rat-infested place. You've got shame that's internalized. You have shame that's externalized. You've got shamed by a capitalistic system that is materialistic. And you're also shamed by your own communities and their traditions and mores. And so it is very difficult to do any change when you have when you are being shamed, if you are living in shame or believe that you're shamed. So I think that how do we get young people to externalize and become a part of the community? I think we can tell them a lot of good things, but we can't shame them into that reality. There has to be some sense of empowerment and community that is taught in order for young people to engage in that. Thank you.
True. And that's so much why we need great leadership now. And we have to develop our own leaders, right, who understand the importance of strong, sound leadership through mentorship, but also through modeling, right? A lot of our people model what they see in the community, in the culture, what they see on TV, what they hear on the radio. And we have to get ahead of that game, right, even when it, in terms of technology, right? And we talked about that on Dr. Rogers' show earlier in the week, is that technology is now guiding our people. What infrastructure, what barriers do we have in place for providing those protections to our people, particularly to our young people? And where do we start the process of getting ahead of the game, right, of getting ahead of those who are directing how we are acting in this society? All right, let's go down to 5416. And again, thank you all for calling. 845-277-9250 is the number if you want to get on the discussion. 5416, you're up next and you're live. Welcome to the Empowerment Show. If you have a question or comment.
I'm sorry. Can you pass me for a minute? This is John Taylor. I do have a comment, but I need a minute. Thank you.
Okay, we'll come back to you. Thank you, Brother John, for calling. All right. Brother George, let me invite you in for just a minute. Now, we talked about education, right? And we're looking at the importance of having an education agenda. Why is education important? And as we look at the other three components, or the other two components that we talked about today, how, like Brother Kebulan said, how do we integrate this education on these levels to make our people understand how important information is?
Well, let's look at the word education itself. Education comes from the word educere, which means to draw up out of, meaning that education is a process that's designed to bring something up out of you. All right? Now, in order to bring out positive out of a person, you have to put in positive, relative information, stuff that individual can relate to bring out the positive. It's just like if I go and talk to, let's say when I was growing up, if I go and talk to a bunch of gang members, right, and I start talking about the rival gang or any other gang, I really ain't gonna have their attention. But if I start talking about the specific area where they live in that they can relate to, they're going to be more responsive to what it is that I'm talking about. Now, whether or not they agree or disagree with me is another thing. But the idea of getting their attention, you get people's attention by talking to them about familiar things. Now, let's take a look at the definition of culture. Now, culture is the result. Now, I got this from Dr. Booker T. Coleman. His name now has been changed, also known as Kaba Kamein. Culture is the result of education. Once you consistently solve the, let me back up. Education is designed to solve the problems of the society. Once you solve that problem of the society and it is effective, then you turn it into a normal routine and it becomes culture. The problem in the Americas is when it comes to education, education is not taking the time to solve the problems of the African American. Most of the time that you're in school is talking about issues that solve the problems of the peoples who live in America. And if you could benefit from it, good. But the problem is, in the meantime, you got this enormous amount of problems that's going on in the black community that are going unaddressed. So my point is this, is that until the educational system adjusts itself to solve the problem of the people who participate in the educational system, then you're going to have the same old thing. It's going to continue to do. And that is how important education is. That's the attachment. Because I'll give you an example, and if someone could prove me wrong, then they need to do it. But in one day, our children could go to school one day and be very excited about education. And they can experience something in that classroom that humiliates them, that will cause them to withdraw from the educational system until they receive some type of counseling to get their focus back into it. They can be humiliated in one day. And this happens to a lot of our little boys. They get humiliated in the classroom, and then they don't want to participate anymore. A lot of that is a result of receiving a Eurocentric education, feeding it into an African-American body. And I say not just African, African-American, because we're the ones that experienced the Maafa, the slave-making system. We didn't experience colonialism, so there's something different, so I can't really speak to that. But our children experienced the slave-making process here, or we experienced that as a people. And so the system that educates us now doesn't take that into any consideration when they're dealing with educating our children. And that's a problem. And that has a great impact on how successful your child is going to be in the school system, brother.
True. 845-277-9250. Right, we're having a real discussion about what's needed in the African American community. I mean, really boots on the ground, right, and using a peace concept or a concept that works as a vision for change and healing within our community, because we know if we really evaluate it and be honest with ourselves, some healing really needs to take place that we have tried to sweep under the rug and we tried to ignore for a long time. 3953, you're up next. Welcome to the show. Do you have a question, comment, or a statement? 3953.
I enjoy the show so much, Marvin.
Hey, how you doing, brother? Yes, sir. Welcome to the show.
I'm doing good. Well, first of all, we need to recognize who the Pelton Masters is in our community, our school system, everything. And we need to break generational curses.
Mm-hmm.
And uplift each other. And stop putting each other down when one of us climb another step on that ladder.
That's true. You got anything else, brother?
Next time you come to Harrisburg, you see me.
All right. Thank you, Brother Will. I appreciate it. Tell everybody up there we said hello. All right. Brother said, thank you, Brother Will. I mean, he made it clear. There's some things that we need to do, right? There's some adjustments that we really, truly need to make. Sister Benita, in terms of community engagement, right, in terms of advocacy, in terms of the work that we need to do on the ground, how important is education to doing it and the education that we need to do the work on the ground?
Well, I think that I want to put a plug in here with the Minister of Education, Brother George, in that one of the things that he says with Black Educational Prints, and you'll learn more about that, he says, education is the lifeblood of a people. How important is it? If you are silent about your pain, they'll kill you and say you enjoyed it. And that was Zora Neale Hurston that said that. If we are ignorant about our history, they'll say we're dumb because we're dumb. If we're ignorant about our history, they'll say that we're inferior to them. If we're ignorant about our history, they'll say that we contributed nothing to this planet. And so that's how important education is. And I'm going to end with the quote that Brother George says, education is the lifeblood of a people.
All right. Thank you, sister. All right, Brother Kebulin, you made a statement in our meeting, our brainstorm session. You talked about politics as being power. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, we said politics, and a lot of times we said politics, we think of governmental politics, Democrats, Republicans, and the House and the Senate. But you got to extrapolate what is power supposed to serve. I mean, what is politics supposed to serve? You derive power from politics. So governmental politics is just a vehicle or a tool you use, like voting for the president, to get power, but that's not the only way you get power. For us, power is unity among us. That's power. And so what we're doing now is establishing power. We are getting away from the European norms and creating the African perspective. Going back to what George was saying, right, how we have been Europeanized. In school, we were taught the first law of nature, self-preservation. If you get $1 billion playing basketball, you just got to think about number one. You don't have to look back. But that's in nature. In nature, the law of nature is group preservation. As long as the buffalo stay unified, that's power. As long as the buffalo stay a unit, the lion is not going to charge them buffaloes. One buffalo like Marvin decides that he's going to break away from the pack. That's the one the lion is going after, right? So we got to change. And George said something, and I always remember this with George, right? Because education has very little to do with what I give you. It has to do with what you give me. I impart information, tap into the untapped potential, or to bring out that which is already in you. So go back to what Sister said about shame, right? Let's say a brother feels shame because he's not able to provide for his family. He don't control the job market. He don't control where the boss will hire or fire him, right? Just by looking from an aspect perspective, brother, your manhood should just be defined about how much money you have, right? You could also attend PTA meetings. You can also take a child to the ballpark, play games, all these things that you can do. We need to redefine manhood. We need to find what group structure is. These things we have to do, right? But we have been Europeanized, and we dare think outside the box, think from another perspective. So what Bonita has brought to the table, what George has brought to the table, Marvin has brought to the table, all these things, looking at it from another perspective, right, it's going to change our lifestyle for the better.
Right.
And that's power. Unity, that's power.
Mm. Yes, sir.
That's true. And we need to do the defining and the redefining for ourselves. Right?
Right.
No other culture living in this country or no other population of people outside of Europeans are asking them how they should do anything or be in fear of being themselves inside of their culture. Right.
Correct.
And I think when, for example, if you go to Chinatown, they're not doing anything other than what they do. And we're going to have to get better at that. All right. Brother George, you got a comment?
No, sir. I'm good. I'm listening right now and learning. And I think that the brothers and sisters are right. They're right on. And the call-ins are making their comments. And I think they're right as well. You know, we headed in the right direction.
All right. I like the conversation. All right. I'm going to try to go back to Brother John, 5416. John, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Thank you, Marvin. I appreciate it. John Taylor in Richmond, Virginia. I appreciate everything that's been said. I think there needs to be a focus on a more than one plane, particularly the school systems. We need to reach out to the school systems. I know when I was in school, there was an effort to provide greater opportunities at a time when things were really kind of tight. And, I mean, I know there's issues in the school systems now, but this, what we're speaking about, needs to be shared on a regular basis. How do you reach the youth of our community? There is a mass of kids there. If they can sit down and we can actually share some of the ideas that's been expressed here so that they know, and then we can reach out and touch more of these kids. I know you work in a program, Marvin, that touches kids, and that's just, it's a minimal, and I applaud what you do, but there's so many other kids that need to be given the opportunity, and it comes down to basic exposure of the ideas. I wonder how many youth that we could have them listen to the ideas that's been shared today and that's been shared by your program every weekend, man. It's amazing. You've got to touch their mind. You have to get them and expose them to this. If you don't, they're going to end up, the society will put a label on them, slow, delinquent, a multitude of labels they will put them on, and they won't get a chance. We need to, and it's not just the school system, but we on mass need to touch the youth and share this information about you know, touching the community and educating them on how to go forward. Those are the comments. Those are some of the comments I have on what I've heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother John. How do we touch our young people's minds? And not only that, how do we touch the minds of their parents? And even how do we touch the minds of their grandparents, right? Because here is what I know, that our people are lacking knowledge. How about that? We lack knowledge and we lack information. And I'll share this. I went over to do a presentation here in Richmond at Martin Luther King School. And I talked to the young people, and this is no disrespect to those who work in the school system, but the young people did not know who Martin Luther King was. I'll say that again. They go to Martin Luther King School, and they did not know who Martin Luther King was or how he died or what he died for. And you cannot necessarily blame it on the school system. What I'm saying is education starts at home. Home training starts at home. So if you want to teach your kids how to be functional in a social environment, you teach them how to sit down at home. You educate them at home. And if we had a system for educating in our community at home that we brought into the school system, I think if we depend on the school system for education, then I think it would be a better place and our children would be better suited to learn. All right, let me go to the panel. What do you think, panel? I'll start with you, Brother Kebulan. What do you think about education, how to educate our kids, how to open their minds?
Well, Brother John that spoke, I know John, and you need models. It's the same John
right.
talking about. It's the same John talking about. His father was a TV repairman. That was a model for him, and it was a model for me as well in the community to see people in our community doing well, doing business and things like that. So you always need a model. Anything you do, for example, I failed in first grade. My model was Malcolm X. I mean, when you talk about somebody that got an eighth grade education and Elijah Muhammad got a third grade education, then I was convinced that I could do it. So it always starts with a model. Wherever you're going to venture out into, right, find a model. If you want to be a writer, find a model who's a writer. You want to be, because I lectured this week, right, and I named some person who was a famous writer, Mark Twain, who never went to college, got 4 or 5 degrees, doctorate, because once you accomplish so much in society, these universities bestow upon you a doctrine. But to make a long story short, just find a model. Wherever you venture out, you'll find somebody who's a model and learn from that person.
All right. Thank you, brother. Sister Benita, how do we recapture our children's minds? How do we reach those minds?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I think that education is about creating a discovery process. It's about questioning. It's about excitement. It's about discovering. And the current system does not do that. The current system indoctrinates. It pours in. And the students must adapt. They must swallow the information. They don't really learn anything. They learn the information and they regurgitate it and forget about it. Also, the school system only teaches the front page. It'll teach you a trick to the problem. It'll teach you a trick to the formula, but it does not teach the back page and help you to understand why. And when you don't have the why, you don't have the context by which to think your way out of the situation. And so education becomes boring and dead and hollow because you're feeding them dead things or apparatuses by which to learn. And they're really not learning. I think somebody was talking about education, the Latin word part of education is to draw, to withdraw, to pull out. And that is to pull out the curiosity that's in them and to answer their questions. Well, you have kids today that are sitting up in class that are not asking one question because they're not interested. And part of that is we don't have a Afrocentric education. Everything is from the Greeks and the Romans, and so we're totally eliminated. So we're not represented, and so that can be very boring. And our kids are also struggling with reading. Something as basic as that, 70% of our children, African-American children in public schools, cannot pass the proficiency of the fourth grade reading test and math test. Matter of fact, the math stats are actually lower than the reading stats. So there is a problem, but I do know this, that our children are brilliant. They are brilliant, but they are bored. And I can tell you this, that we think and process information a lot faster than our counterparts. And so when our kids listen to these teachers today, I think sometimes they hear wah, 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 wah. They're very brilliant, very intelligent, and we need to see them in that and challenge them that in that respect.
All right. Thank you, Sister Benita. All right, I'm going to get one more call in. 1471, you're live. Question or comment?
Peace and blessings, brothers. How are you doing?
I knew it was you, Dr. Rogers. I knew it was you. Welcome to the show, brother. We got to close out with
loving,
you. We'll have you next week.
Loving this conversation. Beautiful conversation. I just wanted to add real quickly, I think one of the responsibilities also is that parents have to go to their schools and find out what their teachers
yes.
are teaching their children.
Yes.
They've got to do that. They've got to be engaged in their school. I've worked with public schools for years, and one of the things that I always used to do with the teachers and the administration is ask them how many parents would show up for the parent-teacher or the PTO meetings that they were called in Milwaukee, or the PTA meetings that we knew them from the old days. And so out of a school maybe of 600-700 children, three parents would show up to the meeting.
Mm. That's right.
And that's just not acceptable. And, you know, and I do agree with Benita, Sister Benita. I do agree with you because I had to go in and off. I was kind of multitasking a little bit today. And so when I, right before I went off the first time, I heard her saying, we got to stop blaming the victim. And I do agree with that. I do agree with that. But I think what I'm suggesting is just holding parents accountable, hold them accountable. And then there was another way. We had what used to be called community schools, where organizations like Delta Sigma Theta, Omega Psi Phi would hold classrooms in the community. And they would teach these things. We got to get back to some stuff, you know, that we've always had. Our ancestors gave it to us. It's a blueprint. We just got to do it. We really do. So that's my comment, good brother. But I like your new format, too. I love it.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. And we'll have you next week right here to continue your series. We'll have final comments. Brother Kebulan, you're first. Sister Benita next. And then we'll close with Brother George. Brother Kebulan. Final comment.
I thought it was a good program, and I like all the callers and the participation. And I just say continue.
Thank you, brother.
I would just like to say, as Maya Angelou said, I am overwhelmed by the grace and persistence of my people.
All right. Thank you, Sister Benita. Brother George.
When your greatest heroes are the villains of the educational system that you're learning from, it means that you need your own educational system. That's me, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. And my final comment is this. If you are willing to do the work on yourself, if you are willing to turn the finger inward, if you are willing to stop blaming others, if you are willing to analyze and evaluate yourself, if you are willing to stop for just a moment to evaluate the program that is running inside of you, the program that makes you think and feel that you're not enough, that you have to do way more than others, if you have to continue to look at yourself and don't feel like you're worthy, something has to change within you first. And as we change ourselves, we change our families. And as we change our families, we change our communities. Next week, y'all, continue to do the work of working on yourself. one day at a time. Peace and blessings. Thank you for calling. Thank you for being there. Thank you, panel. We'll talk to y'all next week with Dr. Rogers. Peace and blessings. Have a great day. And as always, oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah.